And this is determined by who we grew up with, who we admired, and what time we gave to practicing expertise in these three people environments as we wended our way into adulthood. From among the six letters, R-I-A-S-E-C, you name your three preferred people environments, and this gives you what is called your Holland code. For example, S-I-A. Your question is, which three? I was friends with John for many years, and back in 1975, I invented a quick and easy way for you to find out your code based on John's self-directed search, SDS. It turned out that it agrees with the results you would get from John's SDS 92% of the time. This made John laugh. So if you want a more certain answer, you should take John's SDS, $9.95, at www.self-directed-search.com. But when you're in a hurry, this is close. And it's free. I call it the party exercise. Here is how the exercise goes. Do it, please. In the PDF files included with this audiobook, there's an aerial view of a room in which a party is taking place. At this party, people with the same interests have, for some reason, all gathered in the same corner of the room, and that's true for all six corners. Take a look at the room. R for realistic, I for investigative, A for artistic, S for social, E for enterprising, and C for conventional. 1. Which corner of the room would you instinctively be drawn to as the group of people you would most enjoy being with for the longest time? Leave aside any question of shyness or whether you would have to actually talk to them. You could just listen. Write the letter for that corner down. 2. After 15 minutes, everyone in the corner you chose leaves for another party across town, except you. Of the groups that still remain now, which corner or group would you be drawn to the most, as the people you would most enjoy being with for the longest time? Write the letter for that corner down. 3. After 15 minutes, this group too leaves for another party, except you. Of the corners and groups which remain now, which one would you most enjoy being with for the longest time? Write the letter for that corner down. The three letters you just chose are called your Holland code. Incidentally, John always encouraged people to write down somewhere all six versions, technically called permutations, of your code. Thus, if your code were, say, SIA, its permutations would be SIA, S-A-I, I-A-S, I-S-A, A-S-I, and A-I-S. This is especially useful if you are ever going to look up careers that correspond to your code. Put Holland codes for careers into your favorite search engine, and you will find such sites as www.vista-cards.com/occupations. Further, he and I worked together on this application of his system to daydreams. List all the things you have ever dreamed of doing. Then to the right of each, try to guess at what you think the three-letter Holland code would be for each. When done, look at each code and assign a value of 3 to any letter in the first position. Assign a value of 2 to any letter in the second position, and assign a value of 1 to any letter in the third position. That is, in the case of IAS, you'd give 3 points to I, 2 points to A, and 1 point to S. Do this for every code you've written down, then total up all the points for each letter. How many points did R get? How many points did I get? Etc. Choose the top 3 with the most points in order when you're done, and you have the Holland code of your daydreams. As John said to me, this is the most reliable way of determining someone's code, but who would believe it except you and me? Now, copy your Holland code onto pedal number one, my preferred kinds of people to work with, found in the PDF files included with this audiobook. So far, so good. Pedal one, worksheet number two, a chart. Energy drainers versus energy creators. Why do the people you prefer to be around matter at all in the larger scheme of things? Because the people we work with are either energy drainers or energy creators. They either drag us down and keep us from being our most effective, or they lift us up and help us to be at our best and perform at our greatest effectiveness. Here is an exercise to help you identify which is which for you. You'll find this chart in the PDF files and probably need to copy it onto a large piece of paper, 8.5 by 11, before you start filling it in. Column 1, places I have worked thus far in my life. Column 2, kinds of people there who drove me nuts, from the first column. No names, but describe what about them drove you nuts. For example, bossy, always pestering me with their personal problems, always left early before the job was done, etc. List these in any order, it doesn't matter, at least in this column. Column 3, kinds of people I prefer not to have to work with, in order of preference. This is now a ranking of the items in the second column, in exact order of which is worse, next, etc. Use the prioritizing grid to do this. Column 4. Kinds of people I'd most like to work with in order of preference. The opposite of those qualities in the third column, in the same order. Start, of course, by filling in the first column in the chart and then the second. This will bring you to the third column, and here you're gonna need some help. How do you look back at that stuff in the second column and prioritize it? Well, you use the prioritizing grid, in either paper or online form, of course. Incidentally, the completed grid we saw as an example back in Chapter 4 was done precisely at this point. When you've completed this grid, go back to the four-column chart. Copy the first five factors from Section D of the grid into the third column of the chart. What you've got there now is a negative list of what you're trying to avoid, but what you want to end up with is a positive list of what you're trying to find. So look at the five negative items you just put up there in the third column of the chart, and in the fourth column, write its opposite, or something near the opposite, directly opposite each item. By opposite, I don't necessarily mean the exact opposite. If one of your complaints in the third column was, I was micromanaged, supervised every hour of my day, the opposite in the fourth column wouldn't necessarily be no supervision. It might be limited supervision, or something like that. Your call. Note that by first putting your negative list in exact order of what you most want to avoid, third column in the chart, your related positive list, fourth column, will have its factors in the exact order of what you most want to find in a future job. Now, copy the top five in column four onto pedal number one, my preferred kinds of people to work with, in the PDF files. And we are done with that pedal. Time now to move on to another side of who you are. I am a person who has favorite working conditions. Second pedal. My preferred working conditions. Goal in filling out this pedal. To state the working conditions and surroundings that would make you happiest, and therefore enable you to do your most effective work. What you are looking for. Avoiding past bad experiences. Form of the entries on your pedal. Descriptors of physical surroundings. Example of a good pedal. A workspace with lots of windows, nice view of greenery, relatively quiet, decent lunch period, flexibility about clocking in and clocking out, lots of shops nearby. Example of a bad pedal. Understanding boss, good colleagues, fun clients, etc. Why bad? These all belong on the pedal called preferred kinds of people to work with, not this one, which is just about the physical surroundings at your work, not the people surroundings. Of course, since this is your flower diagram, you can put any info you like on any pedal you like. It's just that if you want your thinking to be clear, it's useful to preserve the difference between what is my preferred physical setting and what kinds of people do I prefer to work with, or what clients or customers with what kinds of problems would I most like to help or serve. Your physical setting where you work can cheer you up or drag you down. It's important to know this before you weigh whether to take a particular job offer or not. The most useful way to do this has proved to be starting with working conditions that made you unhappy in the past, and then flip them over into positives, just as we did in the previous exercise. Plants that grow beautifully at sea level often perish if they're taken 10,000 feet up the mountain. Likewise, we do our best work under certain conditions, but not under others. Thus, the question, what are your favorite working conditions, actually is a question about, under what circumstances do you do your most effective work? Pedal 2, Worksheet Number 1, a chart. Physical environments where I would thrive. As I just mentioned, the best way to approach this is by trying to remember all the things you disliked about any previous job, using the PDF files included with this audiobook titled Distasteful Working Conditions. Copy this chart onto a larger piece of paper if you wish before you begin filling it out. Here's what it involves. Distasteful working conditions chart. Places I have worked thus far in my life. Column A, distasteful working conditions. I have learned from the past that my effectiveness at work is decreased when I have to work under these conditions. Column B, distasteful working conditions ranked. Among the factors or qualities listed in column A, these are the ones I dislike absolutely the most, in order of decreasing dislike. Column C, the keys to my effectiveness at work. I believe my effectiveness would be at an absolute maximum if I could work under these conditions, the opposite of the qualities in column B, in order. Column A may begin with such factors as too noisy, too much supervision, no windows in my workplace, having to be at work by 6 a.m., etc. As before, when you get to column B, use a new 10-item prioritizing grid. This time, when you compare each two items, the frame you should put it in is, if I were offered two jobs, and in the first job offer I would be rid of my distasteful working condition number one, but not number two, while in the second job offer, I would be rid of my distasteful working condition number two, but not number one, which job offer would I take? After you've finished prioritizing, copy the first five items in Section D into Column B of your distasteful working conditions chart. Once you have that list in Column B ranked, in terms of most distasteful down to least distasteful working conditions, turn to column C in that chart and write the opposite or something near the opposite directly opposite each item in column B. Copy the five items in column C onto pedal 2, the favorite working conditions pedal of your flower diagram, found in the PDF files included with this audiobook. Okay. On to another side of who you are. I am a person who can do these particular things. Third pedal. My favorite transferable skills. Goal in filling out this pedal. To discover what your favorite functional skills are that can be transferred to any field of interest. They are things you probably were born knowing how to do, or at least you began with a natural gift and have honed and sharpened it since. What you are looking for. Not just what you can do, but more particularly, which of those you most love to use. Form of the entries on your pedal. Verbs, usually in pure form. That is, analyze. Though they may sometimes be in gerund form, ending in ing. That is, analyzing. Example of a good pedal. These stories show that I can innovate, manipulate, analyze, classify, coach, negotiate. Or, to use the gerund form of these verbs, these stories show that I am good at innovating, manipulating, analyzing, classifying, coaching, negotiating. Example of a bad pedal. Adaptable, charismatic, reliable, perceptive, discreet, dynamic, persistent, versatile. Why bad? These are all traits, or self-management skills. That is, they turn out to be the style with which you do your best favorite transferable skills. They are important, but they are not transferable skills. Incidentally, there's a new category floating around in the past 10 years called soft skills. These are really just another way of speaking about your skills with people and or your self-management skills, because examples typically are things like a good work ethic, a positive attitude, acting as a team player, flexibility, working well under pressure, and ability to learn from criticism. A crash course about skills, talents, abilities. Skills is one of the most misunderstood words in all the world of work. It begins with high school job hunters. I haven't really got any skills, they say. Wrong. It continues with college students. I've spent 4 years in college. I haven't had time to pick up any skills. Wrong. And it lasts through the middle years, especially when a person is thinking of changing his or her career. I'll have to go back to college and get retrained, because otherwise I won't have any skills in my new field. Or, well, if I claim any skills, I'll have to start at a very entry kind of level. Wrong. All of this confusion about the word skills stems from a total misunderstanding of what the word means. A misunderstanding that is shared, we might add, by altogether too many employers and human resources departments and other so-called vocational experts. By understanding the word, you will automatically put yourself way ahead of most job hunters. And especially if you are weighing a change of career, you can save yourself much waste of time on the adult folly called, I'll have to go back to school. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Maybe you need some further schooling, but very often it is possible to make a dramatic career change without any retraining. It all depends. And you won't really know whether or not you need further schooling until you have finished all the exercises in this self-inventory. So, let's begin again. Simple, precise, clear. What are skills? According to the father of the Dictionary of Occupational Titles, Sidney Fine, we all have three kinds of skills, abilities, talents, or whatever you want to call them. Sidney Fine's three kinds of skills. Functional, transferable skills. What you can do and love to do with data or statistics, people, or things. Usually these are verbs, constructing, creating, researching, painting, etc. Special knowledges. What you know and love to use. Usually these are nouns, graphic design, physics, mathematics, etc. Self-management skills or traits, how you conduct yourself, alone or with others. Usually these are adjectives or adverbs, adaptable, self-confident, cooperative, dependable, etc. You'll find the complete list of these descriptors in the PDF files included with this audiobook. We will deal with the first kind of skills, transferable skills, and the third, self-management skills, during this pedal number 3. We will save the second kind of skills, special knowledges skills, for pedal number 5. So, let's begin with the functional or transferable skills. There's a trend these days toward breaking down your functional skills into categories like action verbs, or communication or people skills, soft skills, technical skills, research and analytical skills, management, supervision and leadership skills, clerical and administrative skills, problem solving and development skills, financial skills, etc. Maybe that's helpful to you. If so, use it. But for most of us, I recommend breaking down transferable skills into just 3 simple categories. Are they skills you use with information, data, and the like? Or are they skills you use with people? Or are they skills you use with things? The expert, Sidney Fine, further broke them down by category from highest to lowest in his 3-triangle chart, which you'll find in the PDF files. It's an outdated list, but here are the main points he was trying to make with the inverted triangles. And these points are timeless. 1. Your transferable functional skills are the most basic unit, the atoms, of whatever job or career you may choose. 2. You should always claim the highest skills you legitimately can, as demonstrated by your past performance. As the diagram makes clear, within each family there are simple skills and there are higher or more complex skills above them. So these can be diagrammed as inverted pyramids, with the simpler skills at the bottom and the more complex ones in order above them for data or people or things. Incidentally, as a general rule, to which there are exceptions, each higher skill requires you to be able also to do all those skills listed below it. So, of course, you can claim those as well. But you want to especially emphasize the highest skill you legitimately can on each pyramid, demonstrated by yourself at work or at play in the past. 3. The higher your transferable skills, the more freedom you will have on the job. As you will see from the side arrows in the diagram, simpler skills can be, and usually are, heavily prescribed by the employer, so if you claim only the simpler skills, you will have to fit in, following the instructions of your supervisor, and doing exactly what you are told to do. The higher the skills you can legitimately claim, the more you will be given discretion to carve out the job the way you want to, so that it truly fits you. 4. The higher your transferable skills, the less competition you will face for whatever job you are seeking, because jobs that use such skills will rarely be advertised through normal channels. Not for you the way of classified ads, resumes, and agencies. No, if you can legitimately claim higher skills, then to find such jobs, you should follow the step-by-step process I will be describing in the next chapter. The essence of this approach to job hunting or career changing is that once you have identified your favorite transferable skills and your favorite special knowledges, you may then approach any organization that interests you, whether they have a known vacancy or not. Naturally, whatever places you visit, and particularly those that have not advertised any vacancy, you will find far fewer job hunters whom you have to compete with. In fact, if the employers you visit happen to like you well enough, they may be willing to create for you a job that does not presently exist, in which case you will be competing with no one, since you will be the sole applicant for that newly created job. While this doesn't happen all the time, it is astounding to me how many times it does happen, The reason it does is that the employers often have been thinking about creating a new job within their organization for quite some time. But with this and that, they just have never gotten around to doing it. Until you walked in. Then they decided they didn't want to let you get away, since good employees are as hard to find as good employers. And they suddenly remember that job they've been thinking about creating for many weeks or months now. So they dust off their intention, create the job on the spot, and offer it to you. And if that new job is not only what they need, but is exactly what you were looking for, then you have a dream job. Match, match, win, win. From our country's perspective, it is also interesting to note this. By this job hunting initiative of yours, you have helped accelerate the creation of more jobs in your country, which is so much on everybody's mind here as we go deeper into the 21st century. How nice to help your country as well as yourself. 5. Don't confuse transferable skills with traits. Functional or transferable skills are often confused with traits, temperaments, or type. We often think that transferable skills are such things as has lots of energy, gives attention to details, gets along well with people, shows determination, works well under pressure, is sympathetic, intuitive, persistent, dynamic, dependable, etc. These are not functional or transferable skills, but traits, self-management skills, or the style with which you do your transferable skills. For example, let's assume that one of your traits is gives attention to details, and let's suppose that one of your transferable skills is conducting research. In that case, gives attention to details describes the manner or style with which you conduct research. More about this later in this pedal. Pedal 3, Worksheet Number 1. A skills chart, analyzing 7 stories when you are enjoying yourself. Now that you know what transferable skills technically are, the problem that awaits you now is figuring out your own. If you are one of the few lucky people who already knows what your transferable skills are, blessed are you. Write them down and put them in the order of preference for you on the flower diagram. If, however, you don't know what your skills are, and 95% of all workers don't, then you will need some help. Fortunately, there is an exercise to help. It involves the following steps. 1. Write one story about some episode in your life, the first of 7. Yes, I know you can't do this exercise because you don't like to write. Writers are a very rare breed. That's what thousands of job hunters have told me over the years. And for years, I kind of believed them. Until texting came along. Let's face it, we human beings are a writing people. And we only need a topic we have a real passion for or interest in, such as your life, for the writing genie to spring forth from within each of us, pen or keyboard in hand. So call the 7 stories from your life that you're about to write your personal offline blog, if you prefer. But start writing, please. If you are finding it difficult to come up with 7 stories, it may help you to know how others chose one or more of their stories. As I look back, I realize I chose a story that is somehow abnormal or inconsistent with the rest of my life, reveals my skills in a public way, is in a field, such as leisure, learning, etc., far removed from my work. I remembered through or because of its outcome. Represented a challenge, gave me pride because it was something I previously could not do. My friends could not do. I was not supposed to be able to do. Only my father or mother could do, I thought. Only authorized or trained experts were supposed to be able to do. Somebody told me I could not do. My peers did not do or could not do. The best, brilliant, famous could or could not do. I did not have the right degree or training to do. People of the opposite sex usually do. I would like to do again in a similar or different setting, with similar or different people. For free for a change. For money for a change. Excited me because I never did it before. It was forbidden. I took a physical risk. I was taking a financial risk. No one had ever done it before. It demanded a long and persistent physical or mental effort. It made me even with someone. I loved doing because I kind of like this sort of thing. The people involved were extremely nice. It did not cost me anything. Will support or justify the professional goals I have already chosen. Don't forget to look for skills that you use outside of work, such as those you use or develop playing video games, strategic planning, navigating, changing environments, active listening, communicating, collaborating, etc. Not only are these useful in various jobs and fields, but in and of themselves, video game skills can get you a scholarship to college. At least at Robert Morris University in Illinois it can. If you absolutely can't think of any experiences you've had where you enjoyed yourself and accomplished something, then try this. Describe the 7 most enjoyable jobs that you've had, or 7 roles you've had so far in your life, such as wife, mother, cook, homemaker, volunteer in the community, citizen, dressmaker, student, etc. Tell us something you did or accomplished in each role. Okay, the next step is actually writing. Here is one person's first story. A number of years ago, I wanted to be able to take a summer trip with my wife and 4 children. I had a very limited budget and could not afford to put my family up in motels. I decided to rig our station wagon as a camper. First, I went to the library to get some books on campers. I read those books. Next, I designed a plan of what I had to build so that I could outfit the inside of the station wagon as well as topside. Then I went and purchased the necessary wood. On weekends, over a period of 6 weeks, I first constructed, in my driveway, the shell for the second story on my station wagon. Then I cut doors, windows, and placed a 6-drawer bureau within that shell. I mounted it on top of the wagon and pinioned it in place by driving 2x4s under the station wagon's rack on top. I then outfitted the inside of the station wagon, back in the wheel well, with a table and a bench on either side that I made. The result was a complete homemade camper, which I put together when we were about to start our trip, and then disassembled after we got back home. When we went on our summer trip, we were able to be on the road for 4 weeks, yet stayed within our budget since we didn't have to stay at motels. I estimate I saved $1,900 on motel bills during that summer's vacation. As illustrated with this story, each story you write should have the following parts. 1. Your goal, what you wanted to accomplish. I wanted to be able to take a summer trip with my wife and 4 children. 2. Some kind of hurdle, obstacle, or constraint that you faced. Self-imposed or otherwise. I had a very limited budget and could not afford to put my family up in motels. 3. A description of what you did step by step. How you set about to ultimately achieve your goal in spite of this hurdle or constraint. I decided to rig our station wagon as a camper. First, I went to the library to get some books on campers. I read those books. Next, I designed a plan of what I had to build so that I could outfit the inside of the station wagon as well as topside. Then I went out and purchased the necessary wood. on weekends over a period of 6 weeks, I, etc., etc. 4. A description of the outcome or result. When we went on our summer trip, we were able to be on the road for 4 weeks, yet stayed within our budget since we didn't have to stay at motels. 5. Any measurable or quantifiable statement of that outcome that you can think of. I estimate I saved $1,900 on motel bills during that summer's vacation. Now, write your story using the sample as a guide. Don't pick a story where you achieved something big, like how I got my college degree over a period of 10 years. At least to begin with, write a story about some brief episode or task that you accomplished and you had fun. Do not try to be too brief. This isn't Twitter. 2. Analyze your story using the skills grid to see what transferable skills you used. Above the number 1 in the parachute skills grid in the PDF files, write a brief title for your first story. Then work your way down the column below that number 1, asking yourself in each case, did I use this skill in this story? If the answer is yes, color in the little square for that skill in that column with a red pen or whatever. Work your way through the entire parachute skills grid that way with your first story. Some of the skills listed in the parachute skills grid include skills with people. As my story shows, I can initiate, lead, be a pioneer, supervise, manage, follow through, get things done, motivate, etc. Skills with data, ideas. As my story shows, I can use my intuition, create, innovate, invent, design, use artistic abilities, be original, visualize, including in 3 dimensions. Skills with things. As my story shows, I can control, expedite things, make, produce, manufacture, repair, finish, restore, preserve. 3. Write 6 other stories and analyze them for transferable skills. Voila! You are done with story number 1. However, one swallow doth not a summer make, so the fact that you used certain skills in this first story doesn't tell you much. You have to keep writing stories. 7 is the ideal. 5 is the minimum to be of any use, because what you are looking for is patterns. Transferable skills that keep reappearing in story after story. They keep reappearing because they are your favorites, assuming you chose stories where you were really enjoying yourself. So, write your story number 2 from any period in your life, analyze it using the skills grid, etc., etc. And keep this process up until you have written and analyzed all your stories. A weekend should do it. In a weekend, you can inventory your past sufficiently so that you have a good picture of the kind of work you would love to be doing in the future. You can, of course, stretch the inventory over a number of weeks, maybe doing an hour or two, one night a week if you prefer. It's up to you as to how fast you do it. 4. Patterns and priorities. Okay, when you have finished this whole inventory for all 7 of your accomplishments, achievements, jobs, roles, or whatever, you want to look down your completed skills grid to discover any patterns or priorities. A. Patterns, because it isn't a matter of whether you used the skill once only, but rather whether you used it again and again. Once proves nothing. Again and again is very convincing. B. Priorities. That is, which skills are most important to you? Because, as we saw earlier, the job you eventually choose may not be able to use all of your skills. You need to know what you are willing to trade off and what you are not. This requires that you know which skills, or family of skills, are most important to you. So after finishing your 7 stories, or if you're in a hurry, at least 5, look through that skills grid and now guess which might be your top 10 favorite skills. These should be your best guesses, and they should be about your favorite skills, not the ones you think the job market will like the best, but the ones you enjoy using the most. At this point, now that you've guessed your top 10, you want to be able to prioritize those 10 in exact order of priority. Run your guesses through a prioritizing grid. And when you're done with that grid's section D, copy the top 10 onto a building blocks diagram, as well as onto your favorite transferable skills pedal. The building blocks diagram is a pyramid with your favorite skill on top, second and third favorite in the next row down, fourth, fifth, and sixth in the third row down, etc. You'll find a picture of it in the PDF files included with this audiobook. The virtue of depicting your transferable skills in terms of building blocks. Suppose it turned out that these were my top 10 favorite skills. Analyze, teach, research, write, diagnose, synthesize, entertain, classify, convey warmth, lead, motivate. I might prefer to put these verbs in their gerund form ending in ing. Analyzing, teaching, researching, writing, diagnosing, synthesizing, entertaining, classifying, conveying warmth, leading, motivating. If I then enter these terms onto a diagram of building blocks in the order of my personal priority, the top one defines the kind of job or career I'm looking for. If I put analyzing in the top block, I might seek a job as an analyst. But if instead I move teaching to the top block, then I might seek a job as a teacher. And so on with researching, writing, diagnosing, etc. I can choose among several goals. 5. Now, let's turn to your self-management skills or traits. In the PDF files, you'll find a checklist of my strongest traits, with 79 to choose from, ranging from accurate, to impulsive, to supportive, to diplomatic. Now, let's go a little deeper. In general, your self-management skills describe how you deal with time and promptness, how you deal with people and emotions, how you deal with authority and being told what to do at your job, how you deal with supervision and being told how to do your job, how you deal with impulse versus self-discipline within yourself, how you deal with initiative versus response within yourself, how you deal with crises or problems. If you want to know what your traits or self-management skills are, popular tests such as the MBTI, the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator, measure that sort of thing. If you have access to the internet, there are clues, at least, about your traits or type. Working out your Myers-Briggs type, www.teamtechnology.co.uk/TT/T-ARTICL/MB-SIMPL.HTM. An informative article about the Myers-Briggs. The 16 personality types. www.personalitypage.com/high-level.html, a helpful site about Myers types. What is your Myers-Briggs personality type? www.personalitypathways.com/type_inventory.html. www.personalitypathways.com. Another article about personality types. Also, there's a Myers-Briggs applications page with links to test resources. Myers-Briggs Foundation homepage, www.myersbriggs.org. the official website of the foundation. Lots of testing resources. Human Metrics Test, Jung Typology. www.humanmetrics.com/CGI-win/JTypes2.ASP. Free test, loosely based on the Myers-Briggs. Myers-Briggs Type Indicator Online. www.discoveryourpersonality.com/MBTI.html. On this site, you can find the official Myers-Briggs test. The Kiersey Temperament Sorter. http://Kiersey.com. Free test, similar to the Myers-Briggs. You can use your self-management skills to flesh out each of your favorite transferable skills so that you are able to describe each of your talents or skills with more than just a one-word verb or gerund. Let's take organizing as our example. You tell us proudly, "I'm good at organizing." That's a fine start at defining your skills, but unfortunately it doesn't yet tell us much. Organizing what? People, as at a party? Nuts and bolts, as on a workbench? Or lots of information, as on a computer? These are three entirely different skills. The one word organizing doesn't tell us which one is yours. So please look at your favorite transferable skills and ask yourself if you want to flesh out any of them with an object, some kind of data or information, or some kind of people, or some kind of thing, plus a self-management skill or trait or style, adverb or adjective. Why is the trait important here? Well, "I'm good at organizing information painstakingly and logically," and "I'm good at organizing information in a flash by intuition," are two entirely different skills. The difference between them is spelled out not in the verb nor in the object, but in the adjectival or adverbial phrase there at the end. So expand the definition of any of your 10 favorite skills that you choose in the fashion I have just described. When you are face to face with a person who has the power to hire you, you want to be able to explain what makes you different from 19 other people who can basically do the same thing that you can do. It is often the self-management skill, the trait, the adjective or adverb that will save your life during that explanation. Now, on to the fourth side of who you are. I am a person who has a certain goal, purpose, or mission in life. Fourth petal. My purpose or sense of mission for my life. Goal in filling out this petal. To know the moral compass or spiritual values by which you want to guide your life. The most victorious life is one that is dedicated to some larger cause or mission. What you are looking for. Some definition of the purpose and mission of your life. This may help you pick out the kinds of organizations or companies you'd like to work for, if you find ones that are serving the same mission as yours. Form of the entries on your petal. A description of what sphere of life you want to make better, with some attending details. Example of a good petal. My purpose in life is to help the human spirit. I want there to be more faith, more compassion, more forgiveness in families, because I have lived. Example of a bad petal. More justice in the world. Why bad? An admirable goal, but it is too vague. Doesn't give you any guidance as to what kind of justice to look for. You need to dream about the broad outcome of your life, and not just this year's job search. What kind of footprint do you want to leave on this earth after your journey here is done? Figure that out, and you're well on your way to defining your life as having purpose and a mission. As John L. Holland famously said, we need to look further down the road than just headlight range at night. The road is the road of life. Pedal 4, Worksheet Number 1. Diagram. The 9 Spheres of Purpose or Mission. Generally speaking, purpose breaks down into 9 spheres, corresponding to our nature. As you look these over on the diagram of the 9 spheres in the PDF files, the question is, which one appeals to you the most? Time for some hard thinking. Ouch! So study this diagram slowly. Take time to ponder and think. Now, let's look at these in more detail. Consider these as spheres, environments, or arenas in which you like to play. 1. The sphere of the senses. The question is, when you have finished your life here on Earth, do you want there to be more beauty in the world because you were here? If so, what kind of beauty entrances you? Is it art, music, flowers, photography, painting, staging, crafts, clothing, jewelry, or what? If this is your main purpose in life, then write one paragraph about it. 2. The sphere of the body. The question is, when you have finished your life here on Earth, do you want there to be more wholeness, fitness, or health in the world? More binding up of the body's wounds and strength? More feeding of the hungry and clothing of the poor because you were here? What issue in particular? If this is your main purpose in life, then write one paragraph about it. 3. The sphere of our possessions. The question is your major concern the often false love of possessions in this world? When you have finished your life here on Earth, do you want there to be better stewardship of what we possess as individuals, as a community, as a nation, in the world because you were here? Do you want to see simplicity, quality rather than quantity, and a broader emphasis on the word enough rather than on the words more, more? If so, in what areas of human life in particular? If this is your main purpose in life, then write one paragraph about it. 4. The sphere of the will or conscience. The question is, when you have finished your life here on Earth, do you want there to be more morality, more justice, more righteousness, more honesty in the world because you were here? In what areas of human life or history in particular? And in what geographical area? If this is your main purpose in life, then write one paragraph about it. 5. The sphere of the heart. The question is, when you have finished your life here on Earth, do you want there to be more love and compassion in the world because you were here? Love or compassion for whom or for what? If this is your main purpose in life, then write one paragraph about it. 6. The sphere of entertainment. The question is, when you have finished your life here on Earth, do you want there to be more lightening of people's loads, more giving them perspective, more helping them to forget their cares for a spell? Do you want there to be more laughter in the world and joy because you were here? If so, what particular kind of entertainment do you want to contribute to the world? If this is your main purpose in life, then write one paragraph about it. 7. The sphere of the earth. The question is the planet on which we stand your major concern? When you have finished your life here on Earth, do you want there to be better protection of this fragile planet? More exploration of the world or the universe? Exploration, not exploitation. More dealing with its problems and its energy because you were here? If so, which problems or challenges in particular draw your heart and soul? If this is your main purpose in life, then write one paragraph about it. 8. The sphere of the spirit. The question is, when you have finished your life here on Earth, do you want there to be more spirituality in the world, more faith, more compassion, more forgiveness, more love for God and the human family and all its diversity because you were here? If so, with what ages, people, or with what parts of human life. If this is you, then your sense of purpose is pointing you toward the sphere of the Spirit, or if you prefer, the kingdom of God. If this is your main purpose in life, then write one paragraph about it. 9. The sphere of the mind. The question is, when you have finished your life here on earth, do you want there to be more knowledge, truth, or clarity in the world because you were here? Knowledge, truth, or clarity concerning what in particular? If this is your main purpose in life, then write one paragraph about it. In sum, remember that all of these are worthwhile purposes and missions. All of these are necessary and needed in this world. The question is, which one in particular draws you to it the most? Which one do you most want to lend your brain, your energies, your skills and gifts, your life to serve while you are here on this earth? And by the way, if you want to have fun, if you have a computer, go to the internet, type your sphere, the mind, etc., into the search line, and see if anything pops up that intrigues you. When you are done, enter a summary paragraph of what you have decided your purpose or mission is on the goal, purpose, or mission in life pedal in the PDF files. Pedal 4, Worksheet Number 2. Essay, Your Philosophy About Life. There are two challenges you may run into with this pedal. First challenge, you just come up empty on this exercise despite hard thinking. No harm done. If you want an answer, just keep the question on the back burner of your mind. Eventually, some insight is going to break through, tomorrow, next week, next month, or in a year from now. Be patient with yourself. Second challenge, this subject doesn't grab you at all. Okay, then instead of writing a statement of purpose or mission for your life, you can write instead a statement outlining what you think about life. Why are we here? Why are you here? And so on. This is often called your philosophy of life. In writing a philosophy of life, it should be no more than 2 pages, single-spaced, and can be less. It should address whichever of the elements listed below you think are most important. Pick and choose. You do not have to write about all of them. In most cases, you will only need 2 or 3 sentences about each element you choose to comment on. Beauty. What kind of beauty stirs you? What the function of beauty is in the world? Behavior. How you think we should behave in this world? Beliefs. What your strongest beliefs are. Celebration. How you like to play or celebrate in life. Choice. What its nature and importance is. Community. What your concept is about belonging to each other. What you think our responsibility is to each other. Compassion. What you think about its importance and use. Confusion. How you live with it and deal with it. Death. What you think about it, and what you think happens after it. Events. What you think makes things happen, how you explain why they happen. Free will. Whether we are predetermined or have free will. Happiness. What makes for the truest human happiness? Heroes and heroines. Who yours are and why. Humanity. What you think is important about being human, what you think is our function. Love, what you think about its nature and importance, along with all its related words, compassion, forgiveness, grace. Moral issues, which ones you believe are the most important for us to pay attention to, wrestle with, help solve. Paradox, what your attitude is toward its presence in life. Purpose. Why we are here, what life is all about. Reality. What you think is its nature and components. Self. Deciding whether physical self is the limit of your being. Deciding what trust in self means. spirituality, what its place is in human life, how we should treat it. Stewardship. What we should do with God's gifts to us.